ask a question to Krishna about how is it possible that Vivaswan, the sun god, was instructed by you in bhakti yoga about transcendental knowledge, about nishkam karma yoga, about working with detachment. How is it possible that he received instruction to you, since he is ancient and you are just 100 years old also? How is it possible that you instructed him? And then Krishna explains a very famous verse, Bahuni Mevya Chitchani Janmini Tavacha Arjuna Tanyaham Vedasavani Natam Veta Parantapa. The personality of Godhead said, many, many births, both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them, but you cannot, O subduer of the enemy. Even though Arjuna is the subduer of his enemy, he cannot remember his previous births. Why? Why can't Arjuna remember his previous births, and why can Krishna? And the answer is that Krishna never changes his body, and Arjuna does. Arjuna was there in many, many, at many, many other times, and was assisting Krishna in his eternal pastimes. But because Arjuna changes his body, and because Krishna's body is eternal, there is no loss of memory for Krishna, because Krishna's body is eternal. It is the change of body that bewilders the memory of the soul. But Krishna, anadir anganiyasya sakalendriya vrittimanti, that his body is transcendental. It is completely beyond the three modes of material nature. We say that we are not our body, but we cannot say that Krishna is not his body. Krishna's body is composed of Satchidananda. It is composed of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. This is the actual composition of his body, just like our body is made of bones and marrow and blood and veins and capillaries and little tiny hairs sticking out and other skin things, skin and this and that. This is what our body is composed of. And it is temporary. And it is always changing. But Krishna's body never changes. Actually, it never changes. It is eternal. Our body is temporary. Sometimes people have an understanding of God as a very old man. How old? Sitting on a throne with a big white beard. And he is very old. And sometimes when you see some kind of a picture of God, you don't see his face, but you see him sitting on a throne and he's very old with a white beard. But how old is he in those pictures? 87, 90, 98 maybe at most, or maybe even 103. So, according to their conception, because of course we know God is a lot older than 103 years. He's even older than 170 years. So how old is he? He's millions and millions and millions of years old. But for some unknown reason, according to their conception of God, they stop him aging at 103. Why don't they keep, if he's millions of years old, he should be completely, according to their conception, that the older you get, the longer your beard grows. And you get wrinkles the older you get, and your hair goes from black to gray to white. And then of course your hair will fall out and your teeth will fall out. So why do they stop him at 98 or 103? Because they find it convenient to do so. They think that he is an old man like that of 103. So if he can stop at 103, why can't he stop at 16? If he's millions of years old, billions of years old, is it any more difficult to stop at 16 or 25 than 103 or 98? Certainly not. So this concept of God as an old man because he is the oldest is silly. Yes, God is the oldest, but why does he have to look the oldest? We age because we are forced to age. No one wants to grow old. No one wants to get diseased. No one wants to die, but it is forced upon us by the laws of nature. But Krishna is the controller of the laws of nature. He is the controller of the laws of nature. So who is going to force him to get old? It is ridiculous. Just like when the president, we have a law, so when we're driving in the car, the law controls us. We're driving in our car, and it says that you must stop at all the red lights. The law says you must stop at all the red lights, or else the police will catch you and take a bribe. But when the prime minister is driving in his car, they put on the siren, he goes through all the red lights, and the police escort him. So the same law that applies for us is completely suspended for the prime minister. He's above the law. He can do whatever he likes because he is the controller of the law. He makes the law. So no one can say he's broken the law, because by the nature of his position, he is above the law. So similarly, no one, no law of nature forces Krishna to get old. Even though he has taken many, many births, they are not exactly births like we take birth. We take birth forced. No one chose to take birth in Portugal or Ireland or Bihar or New York or Gujarat. Who else? Did I miss anyone? Switzerland, Bengal, so many places. No one chose, but we were forced into a particular body. And that body was in one form when we were born, and then it grows according to a particular pattern, like a seed grows. And when you have one apple seed, you cannot tell it is an apple. It will grow into an apple tree. And when you have an orange seed, you cannot tell it will grow into an orange tree. But in a similar way, when our bodies are very young, they're like seeds practically. And you cannot tell that one person will be like this, have a mature body like this, and another person will have a mature body like this. This is all forced upon us by the modes of material nature, the law of nature. But Krishna is not under the laws of nature. So when he takes birth, it is not like the birth that we take where we are forced. It is more like the appearance of the sun. The sun is always existing, but it appears on the eastern horizon. It appears to our vision, and we think, oh, the sun is rising. But actually, the sun isn't rising. The sun is stationary. But to our vision, we see it like that. Oh, the sun is just coming up. It is just appearing in the morning. But it is not like that, and it doesn't set. It is not like that at all. But it just seems to be like that. It is manifesting practically to our vision. So similarly, Krishna's form is eternal, sat. It is full of knowledge. And it is full of bliss. And it manifests, or Krishna manifests himself so often, whenever he desires. But Arjuna, of course, in his case, he's actually an eternal associate of the Lord, so it doesn't exactly apply. But in any case, Arjuna is taking his birth to be with Krishna, and because he is changing his body and Krishna isn't changing his body, Krishna can remember everything. There is nothing that Krishna forgets, and the living entity forgets everything. Practically there is nothing that he remembers. It's so hard to remember what we were doing 4 hours ago, a day and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, a month ago, 5 years ago. It is so hard to remember these things. The nature of the conditioned soul is that he is forgetful. And the nature of Krishna, one of the aspects of his nature, is that he is full, he knows everything, he is omniscient. There is nothing that he doesn't know. So although Arjuna is the subduer of his enemies, still he cannot remember because he is changing his body. So here, in the next few verses, Krishna is going to explain transcendental knowledge about himself. So the first element of this knowledge is that he appears so many times. But his appearances are not at all like the appearance, the birth of an ordinary human being like ourselves. In the next sloka, Krishna, and the next 6, 7, and 8, Krishna is going to explain more transcendental knowledge about himself. Remember, we must hear transcendental knowledge from evam parampara praptam imam rajasho vidu. We must hear it from the disciplic succession. We cannot hear it from unauthorized sources, or we get the wrong idea. For instance, I once read a Ramayana by one of an elderly freedom fighter for Indian independence. And he was talking about Lord Ram. And he said, although Lord Ram is God, when he comes, he is in the mode of passion because he's a Kshatriya. So he is forced to act in the mode of passion because he's a Kshatriya. And that shows, the man said, of course, we don't accept this at all. It says, it shows that the modes of nature are so strong that even when God comes to this world, they control him and force him to act in one way or another. I see these Ramayans all over, the same version. They're sold in the bookstores, and anyone who reads it, who doesn't have any knowledge, will get completely the wrong idea. It is as foolish as thinking that when the king is visiting the prison house, he's visiting to make sure that the prisoners are securely in behind bars, and he's visiting to make sure that they're being fed or not being fed or beaten regularly or whatever he wants. So he's visiting and he's walking with the guards, and one prisoner is thinking, just see how powerful these guards are. Even when the king comes to the prison house, he is being controlled by the guards. Now what is foolish about that? It means that the prisoner who is speaking like this has no knowledge at all about what the king's position is. The king says, put the guards in prison, and the guards will have to go into prison. The king says, let everyone go, and everyone becomes free. The king says, beat this one, feed this one, do this, do that, whatever he wants happens. He is not at all under the laws of the prison house. So similarly, when Ram or Krishna come to this material world, they are not actually in the material world at all. When the king comes, he is visiting his kingdom, one part of his kingdom. He is not actually in the prison house, although it looks like he is in the prison house. So similarly, when Krishna comes, it is not actually that he is in the material world, because everywhere he is he is only in Vishuddha Sattva. He is only in his eternal potency, internal potency. He is situated completely in his internal potency. It looks to us like he is in the material world, just like it looks to us like the king is a resident of the prison house. But how foolish. It makes no sense. So here, there is some information about Krishna. Now, Krishna is going to explain more. Ajo pi son of Vyayatma. Ajo means, aja means unborn. Api although. Although I am unborn. So, not only is Krishna unborn, but Krishna has also explained in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that the living entity is also unborn. Eternal. Ajo nityam shashvatoyam parano. He is not slain when the body is slain. He is aja. He is unborn. So, Krishna is unborn and the living entity in this material world is unborn. So what's the difference? Ajopi sam avyayatma. The difference is avyayatma. Avyayatma means that his body never deteriorates. And that is the difference. That our body goes through different vikar or transformations, and it grows, it takes birth, it grows, it maintains, produces byproducts, it deteriorates, and then it dies. But Krishna's body never deteriorates. We never see any picture of Krishna with a beard and white hair, even when he's 125 years old. He never gets old. His body never deteriorates. Ajopi sam avyayatma bhutanam. Of all those who are born, Ishvaro, he is the Supreme Lord. And although Prakritim Swamadistaya, although he is in this, and this Prakriti here, it means his form is transcendental. It does not mean it is material nature, it is transcendental nature. Although he's situated in his transcendental nature, still he's only situated in his transcendental nature. Still, Sambhavami, Atma Mayaya, that he incarnates or he manifests himself, Atma Mayaya, by his own internal energy, by his Chit Shakti. So when Krishna comes, he is not forced, it is by Atma Mayaya. Maya means many things. It means illusion, but it also means mercy, and it also means this energy. So it's either we can understand that Krishna comes by his own, he appears by his own energy, not by the material energy, but by his own energy, his antaranga shakti, his internal energy. And also, he appears by his own mercy. So, although Krishna is unborn and his transcendental body never deteriorates, and although Krishna says, I am the Lord of all living entities, I still appear at every millennium in my original transcendental form. It is original. It is transcendental. It is effulgent. It is beautiful. It is gorgeous. It cannot be compared practically to anything in the material world. Although we can look at a fresh monsoon cloud that is overladen with water and say that the complexion of Krishna is darkish blue like a monsoon cloud, so he is Shyama. So we can say that, but actually Krishna's color is transcendental. It doesn't have anything to do with a mundane monsoon cloud. But just to give it an idea of its incredible beauty, its effulgence, its sweetness, it is compared to so many things within the material world, because we have to compare something when we're describing something unknown, we have to compare it to something known. But Krishna's body never deteriorates. It is full of transcendental bliss. It is effulgent, giving off incredible effulgence. Every aspect of his body attracts the heart and the mind. It is full of all beauty, all wealth, all strength. His eyes are restless. He's wearing earrings, shark earrings that reflect in his beautiful cheeks. Beautiful, so beautiful. And he appears in every millennium, time after time after time, in this original transcendental form. And sometimes he appears in one form, and sometimes he appears in another transcendental form, sometimes as Ram, sometimes as Varaha, sometimes as Matsya Koma. So many transcendental forms, but each one of those is completely spiritual and eternal. And they are just manifesting themselves. They simply manifest themselves to our eyesight. They are already existing. They don't actually take birth. So Krishna's birth is not through because of any karma, either pious or impious. It is done by his Atma Maya, his internal energy, his mercy also. That's the other meaning. Atma Maya, by his internal energy, is Chit Shakti, and also he appears by his own mercy. And why is it Krishna's mercy that he appears? Because we are here in this material world satisfied. Just like a pig is satisfied wallowing in the gutters. And we are thinking, there's a famous story that Prabhupada told, I don't know exactly the source, but once Indra was cursed and he had to become a pig. And in his pig body, of course, he had many, he had a beautiful pig wife and so many little piglets, little oinklets. And they were eating and they were in a farmer's house. And the farmer every day would bring them nice garbage to eat. And he was thinking, this is so great. All I do all day long is eat, and my servant, the farmer, is bringing me nice garbage to eat, and I have slop. That's what pig food is sometimes called, slop. So I'm eating so much nice slop. This is wonderful. So this was Indra, the king of heaven, but he was in the illusion of a pig's body. He was thinking he was that pig, because whatever body we are in, we think it is wonderful. And whatever country we are born in, we think that is wonderful. And whatever we are, we think it is wonderful. This is called Maya. So, there was some problem with the administration of the universe, because Indra wasn't there. So Lord Brahma said, okay, we'll end the curse. You just have to come back to being Indra. And Indra, the pig, looked at him and said, I'm not foolish. I have everything. I have my pigs, and this is piglet number one pig. This is my youngest pig. This is my eldest piglet. And so many, he was naming them one by one. And he was saying, why would I leave these wonderful pigs? Look at their noses. How beautiful they are. Etc. So Brahma thought, he's really in Maya. We have to get him out of Maya. So he said, I want you to look at this. You just look at this. You look over there. You say that the farmer is your servant, but look what he's doing. And the farmer was there, sharpening up the knife. For what purpose? To kill him, to slit his throat and eat him. Of course, in Vrindavan, they don't slit the pig's throats, but sometimes they take them out of Vrindavan and they sell them. And sometimes also, one time last year I was on a rickshaw going up the road, and I saw three men holding a pig, and the pig was screaming and screaming, and they were pulling his hair out to make paintbrushes. How would you like a paintbrush out of shonaka hair? A shonaka hair paintbrush. Very expensive. This pig was screaming. What to speak of? When Indra and the pig, former the pig saw the farmer coming to kill him, he immediately said, okay, I'm leaving. Let's go immediately. But this is Maya. That whatever body one is in, by Maya's potency, the external energy, one thinks it is wonderful. And we are forced to love that body. This is the nature of Maya. But Krishna is not at all like that. He is the Lord of all living beings. And yet he appears, but his appearance is completely different. He is not controlled by papa and punya at all. So the question is, so Krishna says he appears by his internal energy, but when does he appear? So the next verse explains when he appears. Yada yada hi dhammasya glanir bhavati bharata. Abhyutanam adamasya tatatmanam shridramyaham. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, glanir, dhammasya glanir, means a discrepancy in religion, and a predominant rise of irreligion. When religion goes down and irreligion goes up, Krishna says at that time, I descend myself. So it's not actually, in one sense, that Krishna descends. It appears to us that Krishna is up, is there, and he comes down to the material world. But Krishna is not exactly like that. He's already present in the spiritual world, and he's already everywhere by his energy. He just manifests and allows us to see him. So since his form is eternal, there is no question of him being born. So therefore the word is Sri Jam Aham. That means I manifest. Atmanam Sri Jam Aham. I manifest myself. Prabhupada explains in the purport. The word Sri Jami is significant here. Sri Jami cannot be used in the sense of creation, because according to the previous verse, there is no creation of the Lord's form or body, since all the forms are eternally existent. Therefore, Sri Jami means that the Lord manifests himself as he is. And the next question, so this is when Krishna comes, whenever there is a need to reestablish religion and to check the rise of irreligion. And the next question is why Krishna comes. That's when he comes. So why does he come? Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chadaskritam dharma samstapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. So many interesting points about this. So of course, paritranaya sadunam means to deliver the sadhus. So one can say that sadhus, by nature, they are transcendental. Otherwise, they wouldn't be sadhus. So if someone is a sadhu, that means he's transcendental. So what is the need to deliver someone who is transcendental? He's already free. So what is the question of needing to deliver him? And the other thing is paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha diskritam, to annihilate the demons. So Krishna, does he have to come to annihilate the demons? If he wants to, he can go like this and they're all finished. He can do it through time. He can do it through his incarnations. He can empower a living entity to annihilate the demons. So So why does Krishna actually come himself? So it is true that that Krishna doesn't need to come himself to annihilate the demons, and the devotees are already delivered. But there's one type of deliverance that Krishna only himself can do with the devotees, and is the nature, and that is that the nature of a devotee, that he is deeply feeling separation from Krishna. This is the nature of a devotee. This is practically what makes him a devotee. That there is no situation in the material world that he feels satisfied in. In fact, because he's always deeply feeling separation from Krishna, and that is actually Krishna's mercy to him. Just like with Dhruva Maharaj, the Super Soul, Paramatma, Lord Paramatma revealed himself to Dhruva Maharaj just to increase his longing to be with him. Because that longing or feeling of separation is so deep in the devotee that makes him always think about Krishna, always. There's not a moment. His love for Krishna is so deep, there's not a moment where he's not thinking about Krishna. Not one moment. And thinking, oh Krishna, when will you come? When will I see you? One moment is feeling like hundreds and hundreds of years. When can I be with you? Oh, come and save me. Save me from the pain of missing you. Of course, that pain is actually transcendental ecstasy. But yet, when Krishna hears the cries of the devotees, and he sees the tears coming from their eyes out of their affection for him, then he will come. He manifests himself. Sambhavami yuge yuge. So he delivers the devotees, not in the sense of protects them from anything, because they're already protected, actually speaking. They're sadhus. They're fully in Krishna's hands. But he delivers them from their missing him deeply, from their separation. Also, in the teachings of Queen Kunti book, Prabhupada explains a similar point. And then he says, why actually does Krishna come? He comes to show mercy to his devotees. And also to display his pastimes, especially his childhood pastimes that are so attractive that we are thinking in this material world that the relationships that we live in are sweet, but actually they are just simply causes of misery. But Krishna displays the sweetness of his childhood pastimes in Braj to attract all the conditioned souls to his lotus feet. So there are three reasons. So anyway, Prabhupada also said why Krishna comes. He says, even though he comes on schedule in the 28th cycle of the 14th manu, I think that's it, is that right? Anyone else?
Seventh.
Seventh manu. So although he comes on schedule, he is not forced to come on schedule. He comes because he wants to. It is the same point. It is just an exercise of his free will. He desires to come and he comes. For any reason he likes to enjoy pastimes with his devotees. So it is also, there are three reasons that are given. Although devotees even can remove irreligion, some work only Krishna can do. Only Krishna can do. And there are three things. That only Krishna can establish pure devotional service. Second, some demons need to be killed only by Krishna. So actually he does go to kill some demons, because he wants to send them back home, back to Godhead. And even if other incarnations kill demons, they don't go back to Godhead. But when Krishna kills them, they go. So to show his special mercy on the demons, Krishna will come and send them home. And then also the third one we mentioned, to remove the separation of the devotees. To remove the separation, the deep, loving, ecstatic feelings of separation, to fill the devotees with a different type of ecstasy of meeting Krishna. So this is what Krishna does and why he comes. The next verse is also very, very famous. Janma kama shame dibhyam evam yo vetti tatvata tatvadeyam punar janma naitimam eti so arjana. So this explains the result of knowing. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities. Krishna has just explained in brief the transcendental nature. What does transcendental mean? Yes, exactly. Beyond the three modes of material nature. So his appearance and activities have nothing to do with the three modes of material nature. They're just going on by yoga maya, by the internal energy. So one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities, in truth, tadvata, veti, tadvata, who knows this in truth, in reality, deeply, such a person, upon leaving the body, he does not take birth again in the material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. So, in this verse it explains that just by knowing, just by what does knowing mean? It means knowledge. So that's why this chapter is called Transcendental Knowledge. Because we should know this knowledge. Because if we know it deeply, in truth, then our material life is finished. We will understand Krishna's position and our material life will be finished. And knowing it in truth means that we know that all of Krishna's activities exist transcendentally on the Brahma platform, on the transcendental platform. This is what it means. And this is the result of knowing. Janma, karma, shame divyam. Divya means that it is transcendental, and the only way one can understand this is through Shastra. And then the next verse and the last verse in this section, here's some examples, and also it takes it a step further. Vitaraga baya krodha manmaya marupashvita bahavo gyana tapasa putamad bhavamagata. Vita, freed from what? Rag, attachment, vaya, fear, krodha, and anger. Manmaya, being mamupashvita, being situated fully in me. So freedom, being free from attachment, fear, and anger. That means that one is free from especially the lower modes of material nature. Attachment comes from what mode?
Passion.
And anger comes from?
Ignorance.
And fear? Anyway, it comes. So if one is free from attachment, fear, and anger, that means that to be free from attachment, fear, and anger means that practically one is nishkam, he has no material desires. Because if you have material desires, you're always afraid. Because you're afraid, if you have something, you're afraid you're going to lose it. And if you don't have something, you're afraid you won't get it. And you're attached, and you're angry because your desires aren't being fulfilled. So one who is actually free from vita, raga, baya, krodha, free from attachment, fear, and anger, he's actually beyond the three modes of material nature. So that's one point. If one is transcendentally situated in this way, and then second point, being fully absorbed in me, so always thinking about Krishna, And how can one think about Krishna? One has to have knowledge about Him. You cannot think about something that you know nothing about. You cannot. The more knowledge you have about something, the more you have the capacity to think about it. And then, knowing who Krishna is, one should take full shelter of Krishna, so therefore, taking refuge in me. So three steps, being free from attachment, fear and anger, then being fully absorbed in Krishna, and then taking refuge in Him. Many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of Krishna. And thus they all attained transcendental love for me. Puta, Madbhava Magata, they attained pure love for Krishna. So this is even better than just knowing. Because by knowing, which was explained in the last verse, one becomes liberated. But by being free from these attachment, fear and anger, fully absorbed in Krishna and taking shelter of Him, one not only becomes liberated, but Madbhava Magata, one attains love for Krishna, transcendental love for Him. So that's even higher. And this is actually the process of advancement and purification, is that one must think about Krishna and become absorbed in Him. Manmana bhava mad bhakto mad yaji mam namaskaru. This is the process. To think about Krishna, iti o eva kinkara, all the rules and regulations are just a servant to this rule and regulation, that one should always become absorbed in Krishna and should never not be absorbed in Krishna. But to do that, we need knowledge of Krishna. So more knowledge of Krishna will be explained. Here it is explained briefly in just three or four verses. Some knowledge of Krishna is explained briefly. And then in chapter 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12, more knowledge of Krishna will be explained. Personal knowledge of that person of Krishna. The person of Krishna. Now we were supposed to do up to 15. Now, okay. Now what would happen if someone becomes absorbed in Krishna? He's thinking about Krishna, but he doesn't want Madbhavam. What does Madbhavam mean, Dhananda? Yeah. So what happens if someone becomes absorbed in Krishna, but he wants to merge into Brahman, or he wants some material benefits, akarma, savakarma, va, moksha karma, udaradi. So one is worshipping Krishna to get Brahman, or worshipping Krishna to get $1 million or something. What happens to such a person? Does he get Madbhavam Sodagasthiti? Does he get love for Krishna? And the answer is explained in the next verse. Ye itamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham mamuvart manavartante manushya partasavasha. Was this on the list of verses we should know for this chapter? Oh, we should put it on it. Such a famous verse. Yes, why not? That gives, 1, 2, 7, 8, 9, 11, and 34. We're increasing, aren't we? 1, 2, 7, 8, 9, 11, and 34. But we won't ask 1. We'll take 1 off. We won't ask 1. Let's make it 2, 7, 8, 9, 11, and 34. That's too many, though, isn't it? Is it okay?
So common.
Some of the most important verses. So Krishna explains that no, they won't get that, because as all surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O Prita. Krishna will give them exactly what they want, not more, not less. So if you worship Krishna to get liberation, you will get liberation. If you worship Krishna to get money, you will get money. If you worship Krishna to get Brahman, you will get Brahman. And if you worship Krishna to get pure love for Him, you will get that. It explains in the purport that if devotees who are pure devotees worship Krishna, they will go to Goloka Vrindavan. If Brahmavadis who accept Krishna's form as eternal worship Krishna, what will happen to them? They accept Krishna's form as eternal, but they think that Brahman is the highest. So they want to go to Brahman. So what will happen to them? Raise your hand. Raise your hand if you know this. Smukha, you have raised, but then you have put down. Bolo. Yeah, they will go to Brahma Jyoti. They will become absorbed in Brahma Jyoti because they are accepting Krishna's form as eternal. And that's what Prabhupada basically explains in the purport. But what happens to a Mayavadi? Now, there's a difference between a Mayavadi and a Brahmavadi. A Brahmavadi accepts Krishna's form as eternal, but he thinks that Brahman is supreme. But a Mayavadi doesn't think Krishna's form is eternal. He thinks Krishna's form is Krishna. When Brahman comes to the material world, he is called Ishwara, and he accepts a form made out of Satvagun, the mode of goodness. And he thinks that form is temporary. So they are actually demons. And Krishna will explain this later. Mogasya moga kamano moga jnana vichetasa asurim rakshashim chayva something mohanim asrita. So those mayavadis who don't accept Krishna's form as eternal, what happens to them? They are worshipping to go to Brahman, but they don't accept Krishna's form as eternal. What happens to them? We won't be able to guess this one. The acharyas say they are given to Maya Devi for repeated birth and death. They cannot even get liberation. This is what Krishna will explain later on in the 9th chapter. Mogasya moga karmano moga jnana vichetasa. All their hopes, all their jnana, because avajananti mamudha, they think that Krishna has assumed this form and personality. Because they possess this nature of demons, they don't accept Krishna's form as eternal. Asunim, rakshashim, chaiva. Because of that, they get all their hopes for liberation, knowledge, any hope they have is shattered. This is what Krishna says about the Mayavadis. It's also interesting to note, here in this purport, Prabhupada explains a difference between what a person who is perfect in his Brahman realization and a person who is a sadhaka or a practitioner. The difference, what happens to them. He says, as those who are impersonalists and want to commit spiritual suicide by annihilating the individual existence of the living entity, Krishna helps also by absorbing them into his effulgence. So these people go into Krishna's effulgence, the ones who are the perfect impersonalists. Such impersonalists do not agree to accept the eternal blissful personality of Godhead. Consequently, they cannot relish the bliss of transcendental personal service to the Lord. Having extinguished their individuality, they are finished. Spiritual suicide, finished. Some of them, who are not firmly situated even in the impersonal existence, return to this material field to exhibit their dormant desires. Avashuddha buddhaya, if they have impure intelligence, if they are sadhakas, is practicing in the material body, they will return. Interesting point. And then the next question, and this will be the last question, I'll make it short, is then if Krishna gives everybody what they want, ye etam mam prapadyante tam stataiva bhajam yaham, if he gives everyone what they want, why doesn't everyone just worship Krishna to get what they want? So Krishna explains the answer to that. Men in this world desire success and fruitive activities. Okay, so why don't they worship Krishna? Therefore they worship the demigods. Quickly, of course, men get results from fruitive work in this world. So people don't worship Krishna because surrender to Krishna to get their fruitive material results is because they want their results quickly, immediately, and the demigods will provide those immediately. And if they go to Krishna to get their material results, like that, if they go to Krishna, Krishna will give them their results, but he won't do it immediately. He will exact some purification of the heart. Because he is so kind that he knows that that material result will not satisfy us. So therefore, he doesn't just give it to us. Rather, he will give it to us, but he purifies our heart. So we understand, like with Dhruva Maharaj. He gave Dhruva Maharaj the kingdom, but he purified his heart to such a degree that Dhruva Maharaj wasn't interested in the kingdom anymore. Because he saw Krishna, which was so much more wonderful than a kingdom. He only wanted to serve Krishna, but yet, so he purified him, so he only wanted to serve Krishna, but yet he gave him the material result. So this is why people don't surrender to Krishna, because they want their material results fast. They want it now, and they don't want purification. So they worship the demigods. They worship this person, that person. As Prabhupada said, they are kowtowing. That's a Chinese word, actually. It means obeisance. Yes? Kowtowing to the so-called leaders or big guns in order to achieve temporary boons. And they indeed achieve those things. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, and we should go up till the end of the next section tomorrow. Take this turn. Now, the next section will describe. This section describes transcendental knowledge applied to work. You take this knowledge and you apply it to work. So this is explained up to 15, and then. Other things, and we'll finish those other things tomorrow. Questions, Radha Gopinath Prabhu?
Questions, chapter 4, verses 11 and 15. The fourth question says, they find elements of the Parinashram system, I was not sure what.
Five elements? Me neither. Where is the Acharya Ratna when we need him? Yeah, I see it. Hare Krishna. 13 is the one that another one that should really be memorized. We won't do that. Chatavanam Maya Shisham Guna Karma Pabhagasa. I think it's right. If you look in 13, you'll find it. Yeah? You didn't. Okay, here's one element. The Lord is the creator of the Vanashrama system. Second one, Brahmins are situated in the mode of goodness. Kshatriyas are situated in the mode of passion. Vaishyas are in passion and ignorance. And Sudras are situated in ignorance. Then, that's five. Then, the Lord has nothing to do with any of the divisions. That's six, because he's not under the modes of material nature. That's six in the first paragraph. I mean, simple things like that. You want some more? Yeah.
Well, just the question before, very much this is what.
Yeah, you're right. Well, then we have to add another few. But it's not a good question, I agree. Anything else?
I thought if someone approaches Krishna for something material, that he only will
have a strict person. Sometimes. That's if he's specially, specially careful with you. And when he's... I've heard Prabhupada say that when Krishna's pleased with someone, he gives them so many things. But when he's really pleased, he
takes everything away. Disha Tadanam Smanai. Maybe if you remind me, the first thing next time I'll tell you one story about Maharaj Yudhisthira when he prayed to Krishna for many material things. If you remind me, Shonaka, I will tell you that story. Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna.